Hey, everybody, it's Kai. Thanks again for taking the time to listen to the Corner Office Podcast. Today, a guy by the name of Will Shafroth. He is the CEO of the National Parks Foundation, the fundraising arm, the private fundraising arm, we should say, of the National Park Service, which means they get private donations to help fund the national parks beyond what the federal government might set aside for that purpose. And how all that works was part of what we talked about.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Will Shafroth, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kai.
Defining of terms here, I think, is what we have to do first. National Park Foundation versus the National Park Service.
The National Park Service is the manager of those 417 great sites in our nation that are national parks, our national seashores, our recreation areas, etc. The National Park Foundation is the official nonprofit partner of the National Park Service. So we help them to raise money to support and supplement the funding they get from the federal government to support our parks.
You're the official partner. So this is a sanctioned operation here. You guys aren't just raising money on the fly.
We are. We were sanctioned by the United States Congress in 1967. We're 50 years old this year.
Lady Bird Johnson, actually, right?
Correct.
Yeah. How do you get your money?
We raise it from individuals and families and foundations and corporations who believe in our national parks and want to find ways to support them.
Would life be easier if Congress just allocated more money? I mean, you guys raise a lot of money, but proportionally not a huge chunk of the Park Service's budget.
That's correct. But what we actually raise money for is a significant part of that part of their budget. We don't pay for staffing or major infrastructure repairs or roads and bridges, which ends up being a big part of their budget. We pay for trail enhancements, educating young people, protecting in-holdings, doing restoration for wildlife habitat. For those kind of investments, we're actually a pretty big chunk of their budget.
Yeah. It is an interesting time now in the government and in the Department of the Interior, specifically, of which the National Park Service is a part, just because of all the controversy over national monuments, which are not part of the Park Service, but also just how we use our public lands.
That's right. Actually, some of the national monuments are part of the Park Service. President Obama established a number of them during his term, as did President Bush before him and President Clinton before him. And some of the monuments they created were, in fact, part of the managed by the National Park System. So there's some of them in Maine. The Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument was established a year ago through the donation of Roxanne Quimby, the founder of Burt's Bees. Mm-hmm. And so that is managed by the Park Service. Many of the other ones that are under review right now are in fact, managed by the Bureau of Land Management.
But to the point, Secretary Zinke has some views on how public lands ought to be used in this country. It must be a little awkward when the head of the National Park Service and maybe yourself as well get in the same room with him.
You know what? Secretary Zinke has been hugely supportive of the national parks and understands the value of public-private partnerships. So he's a member of our board of directors, and he has been actually quite supportive of the work that we're doing to raise private funds to support the kind of work that's happening in the Park Service.
What's the elevator pitch when you go and you meet with funders?
Elevator pitches. There's a variety of elevator pitches depending on who I'm talking to.
I was just going
to
say, as there should be, right?
Yes, yeah. Right. Essentially, we are the official charity of the national parks, and as such, we work to raise private funding to supplement the funding the federal government has, and we do it in a way to try to maximize the impact on the park. And but for our investments, something wouldn't happen.
Maybe my favorite example is a guy we had on this program maybe a year ago, David Rubenstein, who runs the Carlyle Group, gave millions of dollars for the Lincoln Memorial, right?
He's given us money for a lot more than Lincoln. Yeah. The Iwo Jima, Arlington House, the Belmont Paul Women's Equality National Monument, and most recently the Washington Monument to repair the elevator.
After the earthquake and all that.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting that private citizens are stepping up now to do some of these things that not really arguably, but fundamentally should be part of the national responsibility.
That's true, but the country has a history, a long history of philanthropy. The Rockefellers donated funding and land to create Virgin Islands National Park, Grand Teton National Park, Acadia National Park. Roxanne Quimby carried on that tradition this last year with donation of the land to create the new Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. So people have recognized that these are sacred places that they love, and like many other things that people support with their charitable dollars, they wanted to direct those to the national parks. And it's not just through us. It's through 250 local organizations to support individual parks are also receiving hundreds of millions of dollars per year to support the parks.
You are a lifetime, I don't want to say outdoorsman because that implies a whole different thing, but a lifetime conservationist, right? I mean, you've spent your life in this field. Do you think we are doing with our public lands now what we ought to be doing?
Well, it's a constant balance, Kai. The public lands have always been not just for recreation and conservation and preservation. They've also, especially the Forest Service lands and BLM lands, mm-hmm. have had multiple use missions from the very beginning. And so it's a constant balancing act. You know, I think the national parks represent the best of what America has to offer, and they definitely have a very strong conservation bent to their mission. And so in that way, I think we're doing okay with our national parks. The other public lands have always been more controversial.
In terms of how they're used, right?
Correct.
For resources and extraction and all
yes.
of that. I imagine it's an easy ask when you say, listen, we need X amount of dollars for the National Park Foundation, because who doesn't like the national parks?
Yes.
This is funny. You rolled your eyes. And I'm like, wait, what?
Well, it's because we're competing for people's charitable dollars, in effect, because they care about their schools and their civic interests. They care about social services. And so we have to make a case and really appeal to their emotions in many cases to ensure that we get a piece of their charitable pie. And so, yeah, I mean, the great thing about national parks is that there is something for everybody, whether you care about wildlife or major landscapes or outdoor recreation or history and culture. There's something there that you probably feel passionately about and we can share with you, and hopefully you'll support it.
There is something in the national parks and in the great outdoors for everybody, but there is also a diversity issue with access to and the people who use the national parks in this country. How do you, since it's your job, not mine, get that access more widely distributed, I guess is a way to put it?
It's a great question, and was one of the big questions that led into the centennial of the national parks a few years ago. We actually did some research with the National Park Service to look at who is coming to the parks, who's contributing to them, who advocates for them, and found that the millennial generation, which actually self-identifies as 45% non-white, so by definition very diverse, was not finding the national parks very relevant to their lives. And so we started something called the Find Your Park campaign, which targeted specifically the millennial generation through celebrity ambassadors and social media, and began to awaken that generation to the importance of national parks. And we're beginning to see some real movement in their engagement and their advocacy and support of the parks.
And attendance, do you see people of color and younger people getting into the national parks?
Yeah, there isn't actually a demographic survey that the Park Service, they don't like check people at the gate and you know, have them fill out a form. But we know that the visitation's up dramatically. In the last 4 years, about 60 million more people went in 2016 than 2013. That's a huge increase. Unfortunately, a lot of that increase is happening in a relatively small number of parks. But there is more diversity in the parks, for sure.
When you leave this job, in however long you decide that's going to be, what do you hope the national park system in this country looks like?
Well, I'm hoping that the national park system can be healthier, if you will. And what I mean by that is that they have the resources they need to support the kinds of work that needs to happen. And every park is experiencing different levels of their maintenance backlog being oversubscribed. And so there's a $12 billion need in the system to support basic maintenance.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's
they have
amazing.
A $3 billion annual budget to cover everything. And on top of that, there's a $12 billion backlog.
$3 billion budget and a $12 billion backlog. It's not like you guys can raise enough money to fix that, right? Is there a way that, I guess, outside sources, or how can that be fixed? Because that's not sustainable.
Well, I think there's a lot of interest in Congress right now in addressing that maintenance backlog. There are actually bills that have been introduced, and I know the administration is looking closely at this to take that down. Half of that is roads and bridges, and that's clearly not something that the philanthropic community is going to want to support. And half is in pretty hard infrastructure, HVAC and roof repair, things like that, which is frankly very hard for me to go out and ask donors to cover.
Right.
So those will be funded through governmental action. I also think that we can be more effective in deploying private investment dollars in the national parks to find ways to do energy efficiency improvements, lighting, things like that, where you can actually use the savings to pay for the long-term investment.
Should we go to like Honeywell for AC improvements and GE for lighting in the parks? Is that what I'm hearing?
Could be, yeah. Well, there's a lot of different lighting companies that are helping. In Big Bend National Park, for instance, there was a lighting company that went in there and reduced the lighting bill by more than 90%.
Huh.
And the profile of the lighting in that park, which is fundamentally about quiet and darkness, means that you can actually see the stars more effectively at night because there's not these big lights shining up. The light's shining down where it's needed. We also want to see that the parks are visited by all citizens of this country, that they really do reflect the diversity of America. And finally, that they are not just the places that everybody knows about, Yellowstone and Grand Teton and Yosemite and Grand Canyon, but the lesser known parks, these amazing gems that exist. I was last weekend at Flight 93, which is a place that our organization helped raise $46 million to stand up.
In Pennsylvania.
Shanksville, yeah. Pennsylvania. And it is one of the most amazing places, both the landscape and the built part of that environment, that people really need to see. And I would hope that the visitation is spread so those kinds of places are appreciated as well.
We want as many people as we can to get into national parks just to see the reality of the landscape of this country. Overuse, though, is a real problem.
No question about it. There's one of the superintendents in one of the larger parks said, find your park, just find somebody else's park because my park
right,
has got 3-hour lines at the entrance station.
Yeah, which is crazy, right?
Which is crazy. So, I mean, some of that we need to do a better job of moving people through and managing the flow. In Zion National Park in Utah, yep. There's a travel management plan essentially that moves people on buses and so that you don't have overcrowded parking lots and people waiting, but people are moved in and out much more efficiently. Some of the bigger parks need to go to that. They need to have, in my view, things like fast passes so you don't have to stop and
God, you say that and people say, oh, it's the Disneyfication of national parks.
Well, I think the reality is that we've got to move more people more effectively and spread them out into the park so that more people can appreciate them.
Will Shafroth at the National Park Foundation. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Kai.
All right, that was my conversation with Will Shafroth. He is the CEO of the National Parks Foundation. One thing I ought to mention, the magic of podcasts, is that we recorded that interview, well, a couple of weeks ago, shall we say. Earlier today, though, this is Wednesday, I guess we're dropping this, the National Park Service proposed raising the entrance fee for the 17 most popular national parks during peak season to help pay for that $12 billion maintenance backlog. Increase would be up to $70. Currently, it's about $25 or $30 to get into a national park. Anyway, that's it for us today. Thanks for listening. If you liked what you heard or if you like this podcast in general, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, will you? We read them. We appreciate them. 5 stars is great. 1 star, well, it's painful, but, you know, we can learn from criticism. This episode was produced by Bridget Bonder. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the executive producer. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you next time. Thanks a lot.